Hello, I'm Costas Halavrezos. Welcome to Encore, brought to you each week by BoomersWork.com here on Seaside FM. When is the right age to retire? And who should decide what that age should be? You or your employer? Today on Encore, I'm speaking with Dr. Jim McNiven of Halifax. He's taught public administration at Dalhousie University. He's a former deputy minister of development for the province of Nova Scotia, and he also served as president of the Atlantic Provinces Economic Council from 1977 to 1981. More recently, he's turned to writing about American history. His book, The Yankee Road, was published in April, and he's now engaged in working on the second volume, which we hear will include a segment on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland. Dr. McNiven, welcome to Encore.
All right. Thank you.
You've had a very extensive post-retirement career, but before we get to that, I want to ask you about your initial departure from Dalhousie back in 2006, I believe.
Yes.
You described it as being mandatorily retired. What happened for people unfamiliar with that?
Sure. For a long time, most provinces had a... if you will, a law regulation where people got to be 65 and they were required to retire. And these are often written into employment contracts and even union agreements, whatnot.
And why that age? Why was that picked and at what point in history?
Well, I think it goes back practically to Bismarck and his decision to start up a pension plan in Germany in 1889. But gradually over time, it was felt that that was the proper time to retire. And with a lot of younger people coming into the economy in, say, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it sort of got written into a lot of laws. Not every province had mandatory retirement, but most of them did. And then the Supreme Court, said, no, you can't do that. And so they all started getting rid of it. And Nova Scotia was about the last one to do so. I think it was a year after I retired or was retired, fired on account of age, I like to call it, that Nova Scotia abolished the practice.
So do you think your case nudged that along?
I don't know. I made a little stink about it, but there were others who also did. And I don't think the province, I don't think it would have happened even now if it hadn't been for the courts pushing the whole country to go that way.
Now you say that forced retirement at age 65 was the last bad thing that happened to you, and that it really freed you up to do things you like doing without having to put up with all those meetings you probably attended, stuff like
right.
that.
I at the time, I was mad as hell because I still felt I was, you know, I had the energy and I wanted to do things and I liked what I was doing. And I didn't like being told, you know, go away, here's, you know, pat you on the head and nice job, see you around. I was upset. But as time went on and I started staying just as busy but in different ways, I found that more fun because I could pick and choose what I wanted to do rather than having to show up at some interminable faculty meeting at 9 o'clock some morning when I'd just as soon be doing something else.
Now, we have lots of universities, not only in Nova Scotia, but around this region, so there are a lot of academics out there perhaps contemplating retirement. What are some of the things you've seen among your peers in that cohort that they get freed up to do that they can't really do inside the ivory tower?
Well, there's three things in terms of when to sort of stop working. I'll put it that way, as opposed to retirement. The word retirement is, to me, is just a legal term which suggests that you suddenly had a job and now you don't have one. Doesn't mean you stop working. It's like the old Newfoundlander said, I might be unemployed, but I ain't out of work. Okay, so you have to understand how these things work. So one of them is your health, obviously. Second is your money. You know, these days you have to sit down. The average age of retirement in Canada is 62. The average age when you pass away is 80. So you got to sit down and plan out at least 20 years of how am I going to pay the rent, so to speak. So that's the second thing. And then, do you like what you do, or is there something else you'd rather do? So if you can afford it and your health's good and you'd rather do something else, well, then I'd say take off whenever you can. And if you like what you're doing, well, then stick at it. you know, and especially if it makes you some money.
And have, say, some of your former colleagues done that after leaving academe?
Yeah, they're sort of all over the place. A couple of guys I know just said, I've had it, and I'm going to go out and sit on the boat and, you know, catch fish or something like that, or have a good time. Other people have said, well, I'm going to, you know, pursue a part-time. I'm going to keep doing my academic research. I don't care if it pays or doesn't pay. I'm going to do that. So there's a whole variety of people who've come through or out of university who've done a bunch of different things. My own feeling is that you need to do something that's of interest and that you really keep active at, because the alternative really isn't too good.
You're listening to Encore, presented by BoomersWork.com on Seaside FM, our weekly exploration of topics of interest to people who've passed that landmark age of 50. My guest is Dr. Jim McNiven, who's had careers as an academic, a senior civil servant, and most recently, author of The Yankee Road. Just getting back to academic life, there's quite a mythology around it, that it's a very warm and cozy place to be, and many people envy it. What are some of the concerns, though, for people leaving that? I mean, are there some insecurities for academics who are leaving that world behind?
And, yeah, actually, in the last, I would say, 2-3 decades, the warmth and the coziness has sort of disappeared in these places. It's like other jobs. And in fact, one of the things that has happened has been, you know, if you don't produce a lot of research and you don't get it published in the right spots, you don't get promoted. You don't get promoted, you don't get your salary raised other than the minimum that they normally would throw out. And it's all about reputation. You don't get offered the good jobs at Harvard or wherever. So the pressures on academics today are very, very different and much more intense than they were, say, 20, 30 years ago. So the picture of the academic sort of sitting around in a tweed jacket smoking his pipe in the faculty club, not really, not anymore, never. There's just too much pressure on people to produce these days.
And it's a very different world also for those people who are entering, maybe to fill some of the positions that are being vacated by older professors.
Well, and there's a lot of movement around too. I like to characterize, and I've written about this, the whole university system in the global system, as being a sort of McDonald's without a headquarters. Everybody's producing the same kind of products. They're teaching the same kind of courses all over the world. And there are websites where you can see, you can get hired on, or there are things sort of like Boomer's Work, but I tell you, here's a job in Austria teaching mathematics, or here's a job in somewhere else teaching chemistry, and they're all over the world doing roughly the same kinds of courses. So you get a lot of movement, too, from one place to another place. Somebody will stay 4 years here and then go on to another one, and generally trying to climb the ladder in terms of prestigious universities. So that moves everybody around.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've taught public administration. When you look at people who are doing the administration these days in governments, I mean, over the past 20 years, we knew about the demographic boom of baby boomers coming and approaching so-called retirement age. How would you rate the response of governments in Canada to that reality and now having to deal with it?
Basically, it's a nice day, isn't it? Okay. this has not been on the priority list. The thing is first of all, you can't ever have a crisis in this stuff. It's like a slow-moving glacier. It's going to keep pushing you until it pushes you into the, you know, neck deep in the water, and the ice is still coming. But it's never a really good media-type crisis. And secondly, it's always just over the hill. And things do change it. In Nova Scotia, if we would have grown at 2% after the crash in 2008 every year, we would have virtually no unemployment in this province right now. But we flatlined. We basically are not growing. So there's plenty of people unemployed because nothing's happened in the last 7 years economically. might be a little touched this year, but who knows?
So what about the people who have actually retired and maybe not bothered to explore opportunities to do part-time work, things like that? Are they in a position and are they present in numbers where they could actually benefit an economy like the one we're in now?
I think so. I think there's two things that people ought to be looking at that way, and it one is you should look for something that you want to do that's interesting, looks interesting, and keep your flexibility. If it doesn't prove to be interesting, well, you can do what you want, okay? And secondly, you got to keep busy. That doesn't mean you have to have a 40-hour week job, or you have to, drive long distance truck or something like that. But you have to have something that keeps you going, whether it's a hobby or otherwise. And oftentimes, the nice thing about a job is that when you get your paycheck, that's sort of a tangible evidence that what you're doing is valued by somebody. Whereas you can't get that out of a straight hobby. You can have satisfaction, personal satisfaction, gardening or collecting old bills and coins and things like that. But there's nothing like getting a few bucks here and there to sort of say, somebody else thinks this is worth it.
Now, your book, The Yankee Road, talk about interesting new things to do in retirement. That was really about how the westward thrust of people and ideas from New England more or less created modern America. It was published in the spring of 2015. Tell us about it and how leaving full-time employment gave you the opportunity to research and write such a comprehensive book.
Well, that was it. A number of years before I retired, I was sitting in know where Quincy Market is in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was sitting there, wife's looking at various things, and I'm sort of staring at Larry Bird's shoes. I don't know if you've ever been there. There's a pair of his bronze shoes, basketball shoes, there, right on
and
the
for
ground.
For good reason.
Yeah, and Red Auerbach statues there. Anyway, so I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking, wait a minute, now how? And next thing you know, I'm thinking, all these people out of New England, Yankees, and then there was, in the Civil War, there was Yankees versus Rebels. What's a Yankee? It's everybody in the North. And then by 1917, you got George M. Cohan and the Yanks are coming. Well, then it's everybody in America. And I'm thinking, how did Americans get this nickname? What the heck is it?
The Yankee Doodle Dandies.
Well, and that goes back to that exact song was actually invented by a bunch of British soldiers at Lewisburg after a siege to put down the Yankees that were with them because they didn't think they were very good soldiers. And it was to put them down. They're a bunch of country hicks coming in, sticking a feather in their head. Macaroni in it, if you know the song, is all about Italian fancy duds. Okay, so here's this hick riding on a pony with a feather in his hat. And, ha, ha, ha. Didn't prove out that way too later.
Now, very quickly, can you give us a preview of some of the points in Volume 2 of Yankee Road?
Well, okay, there's some interesting ones. First of all, one is about the most famous unknown person, Nova Scotian. Okay, Abraham Gesner, who invented kerosene. Okay, so talk about that. William Lloyd Garrison, the abolitionist. I'm just tying them into the Maritimes here. Whose family all came out of around Oromocto and Fredericton. People like that. So I have some Yankee ties to New England or to the Maritimes and throw some of that in because I know this end as well. And essentially, I did a piece on abolition. I did a piece on, I'm doing a piece on a rock and roll museum, all kinds of things like
that. You can't pass that up.
No.
Jim McNiven, thanks for coming in today. I've been speaking with Dr. Jim McNiven, former professor at Dalhousie University and author of The Yankee Road. Now, if you'd like to find out more about the book, go to The Yankee Road, that's all one word, theyankeeroad.com. He's currently working on Volume 2, which will include a stop at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland. If you'd like to comment on points raised in today's show or to suggest topics you'd like to hear explored on the program, send us an email, encore@boomerswork.com. That's E-N-C-O-R-E, encore@boomerswork.com. Each week at this time, boomerswork.com brings you Encore here on Seaside FM. We'll introduce you to men and women exploring new and exciting topics of special interest to the ever-growing number of Canadians aged 50 and over. I'm Costas Halvarezos. Have a great day.